Okay, all right. We are recording. This is it. This is the latest episode of the podcast from Moab, Utah. My hotel again. Not from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, from Moab, Utah. The Red Cliffs Lodge on the banks of the Colorado River. This is People Pleaser. And I'm Austin Archer, and it's me, and I'm live on TikTok. TikTok's here. We got 81 people on TikTok listening live right now. And I wasn't going to do one of these. I was going to skip it this week. I told y'all a couple weeks ago that I'm shooting the movie and that this week was going to be very busy. It was very busy. And it's Friday night, and I just wrapped this portion. And I wanted to come and talk about it. And I'm not, you know, this is one of those things where it's like, I don't think I can do a video about this. I can't afford that many people seeing it. And I wanted to do something about it. I wanted to talk about it with you. I just am like very full emotionally right now. And I wanted to talk about it. And the fun thing about this podcast is like, when I'm making a video on TikTok, I got to find a way to be succinct. And I'm not succinct. I am not the most succinct creator. I don't make videos that are 15 seconds or 30 seconds long. I make videos that are two and a half minutes, 3 minutes long. But that to me is still like, I have to boil down this idea that I want to talk about into 2-3 minutes. And on the podcast, I can really flesh things out and get to the root of what my thought is and my ideas are. I am a long-winded person. That's why this format is good for me. And the other thing I like about it is I only have about 1,500 weekly listeners, and I love you people who listen, who come back week after week after week and listen to this podcast. The way I think about it is like, if I was doing a weekly story with a guest or a weekly symposium on some thought I had and 1,500 people were showing up to listen every week, I would 100% do that thing. So on the internet, it's like, that seems like not a lot of listeners, but really, there's 1,500 of you that come back every week and listen to my podcast again. Thank you so much for doing that. And because you're so small, I feel comfortable talking about this story. I don't know if I were a bigger actor, if I was a bigger presence in this film, I certainly don't think I would be allowed to talk about this story. And I don't think I would probably have a publicity team and a publicist that would be like, managing everything that I say about this experience. But since I'm just kind of a small player, I get to sort of relay my experience in the big leagues, as it were, to my relatively small podcast audience and this small gathering of people here on TikTok Live. Okay, I talked about this last week on the show, but just to catch everyone up, I, over the last 3 weeks, have been in the desert shooting a big epic Western. This is a big sprawling epic giant Western written and directed by Kevin Costner, the one that you're thinking of, that guy, not the other one. I don't know who the other one is, but it's the one you're thinking of. And it's just got a million huge names in it. I mean, the cast is just massive. If you look this up, but you can Google it. You can say like Kevin Costner Western epic project. You can Google it. It's out there. It's not like I'm like breaking the story on the fact that this is happening. There are stories about the fact that this is happening. Much of the casting has been announced. This is public knowledge, so I'm not really like letting the cat out of the bag. I'm not going to tell any details about the story or anything like that, but I'm in this movie. And I'm supposed to be in the first two movies, actually. It's a series of films. And I'm working with people out here who I've been watching in films my entire life. And here's the thing, guys, is I've been really lucky that this is all I wanted to do from the time I was a little kid. I knew what I wanted to do my entire life, and for better or worse, I get to do it. I've had a really fortunate career as a theater actor and gotten to do a lot of really great things on stage and work with people that I really admire and work on scripts that have been really fulfilling to me and things that have been really challenging and in great ways at great times in my life where I really needed that challenge. And on film, it's sort of been this thing my whole life where, like, every once in a blue moon, I get to do a really cool thing. And I'm usually a very small part of it. I'm usually a very small cog in this massive, big machine with lots of people that I really admire. And for a few days, I get to show up and be a part of it. And I get to have the same job as some actor that I've always, you know, like, I did a movie a couple of years ago. And it's like, for a couple of weeks, I was doing scenes with John Leguizamo and Ana de Armas and Ty Sheridan. There's, you know, I worked with Jonathan Groff on a TV show for a week and got to watch him work. And it's like, every once in a while, I get to do a cool thing. Acting's weird like that. It's like, like, there's the NBA, you know, there's these people that are players in the NBA that are salaried players that are always on a team, that are always getting regular minutes. And then there's these other people that, like, every once in a while get to go in and play in a game, but we get like a couple minutes. They're just like, oh, for this game, we're going to bring in, this guy who was a local theater actor in Salt Lake City growing up, and he's going to come in for this game and he's going to play about 3 minutes in the game. It's not really going to affect the outcome of the game. Steph Curry's still going to take most of the shots, but this other guy's going to come in and dribble the ball a couple times and maybe catch a couple passes and maybe dish off a couple passes and maybe play a little defense for about 3 minutes, and then he'll get out of there. Don't worry. but It's weird like that. It's weird because you show up and you try to pretend like you belong there. Because in my mind, it's like, well, I've been an actor my entire life. I really have not done anything else. When people ask me the question, how'd you get started in this? I always say, I've always been doing it. I'm 34 years old. I did my first stage show when I was 4. And I kind of wanted to do it from then on. And it's been 30 years of just like, this is what I do. And there have been a handful of super fancy projects in there. But mostly it's stuff that no one's ever heard of. And but I'm an actor. I've been acting my entire life. But I still, when I show up on these bigger projects, it's like, yeah, just because I've been playing basketball my whole life doesn't mean I'm a fucking NBA player. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, you really see what you're made of. The imposter syndrome is damn near impossible not to feel. God, why did I want to talk about this? The theme on this podcast lately, over the last few weeks, the theme has been confronting discomfort. Sitting in discomfort, getting used to feeling uncomfortable, getting used to feeling pain, fear, worry, sitting in it, being curious about it, investigating it, not running from it, learning from discomfort, learning to accept it, engaging with and embracing the reality of impermanence, that even the beautiful things like this, beautiful opportunities to go out and make a movie with my heroes, it's fleeting. I had 3 weeks out here. And when you're told that as an actor at my level, that you're going to go do 3 weeks on the movie, that's like, damn, that's good. That's good. 3 weeks. That's solid. And God, I felt like I lived in this hotel room for the last 3 weeks and it's over now. And I'm about to go back to my apartment in LA and no longer be in this movie. And it's fleeting. And just like that, it's over. But yeah, this is what I wanted to talk about. as long as I've been doing this job, and is in all my years and all the classes that I've taken, all the audition classes, all of the technique classes, I must have heard 200, 300 times over the years that if someone asks you in an audition if you can do something, if they say, hey, how good are you at downhill skiing, figure skating? How good are you at painting? How good are you at pogo sticking, unicycling? If they ask you if you can do something, you say yes, and then you figure out how you're going to learn how to do that thing if you get the job. And that's just, I mean, I've never heard anyone say, just tell them you can't do it. I have heard so many people over the years say, just say yes and then figure it out. And I think that there is a level of actor that you can be where you tell people, no, I can't do that. And it's okay because you have some kind of security in your reputation and in your name that you can go ahead and say, no, I don't do that. I'll need a stunt double for that or something. Or like, I just, you know, I don't do that. But when you're an actor at my level and you're trying to get any job you can possibly get, when someone asks if you can do something, you say, yeah. Even if the answer is like, yeah, I think so. Yeah, I can, you know, and I mean, God, sometimes I've been on set where they come up and they go, you think you can fall down a flight of stairs? And I go, if stunts show me how, yeah, I think I can figure it out. Yeah, sure. And like, I don't know if I can. And maybe I should get better at learning how to say no. The long and short of it is, this is a massive Western epic, and about a month and a half before I knew I was cast in the film, my agent called me and said they want to know can you ride a horse, and how good are you at riding a horse, and how comfortable do you feel horseback riding? And to my recollection, this is to the best of my recollection, I felt like I gave a pretty fair and honest answer, because at this point, when my agent's calling me and asking this question, it's making me think, okay, they're considering me. They're thinking about me for this thing. So I said, okay, I'm going to let you know. I rode horses as a child on vacation a couple times 20 years ago. You know, like my family took a family vacation to Hawaii. We did some horseback riding, you know, walking around as tourists on a horse. And I did that a couple times as a kid. I think... And this is me literally just thinking, if they can put children, random children on a horse and let them go for a ride, I was like, I think given 3 or 4 lessons with the set wranglers and whoever they want to set me up with, I think I can do okay. I think I can make it look okay. I can sell it. I'm an actor. Even if I'm not as technically proficient as the other guys, I can make it look like I can just have an air of confidence on my face that sell. I'm thinking, and I've done this a million times in my career, just gone, sure, yeah, I got it, you know? And if it was something like, can you skateboard? Can you do a kickflip? I'd be like, no, guys, I can't. I can't do that. But I'm just thinking, yeah, little kids get on a horse. I could, yeah, I can do that. And so I showed up here in Moab, I still haven't been on a horse in 20 years. And my first day on set, I think that the message got relayed, because one of the first things that Kevin Costner said to me as he came over and he said, have you had a chance to get on the horses yet? And I said, not yet. And he goes, no, you'll be all right. We're going to get you up there and just spend some time with these guys. Look at the way that they stand. Look at the way that they hold the reins. Just mimic them, you know, just mimic their posture and the way that they sort of work with the horse, with the way that they look and they steer and all this stuff. And so I'm thinking he's aware that I'm not coming into this shoot as an expert stunt rider or anything like that. And he's being very gentle with me. Don't worry, we're going to take care of you. And so I'm thinking, yeah, we're going to figure it out. I spent a week where I was on hold here, not working, and they didn't know if they were going to use me for these different setups. And that whole week, I was trying to get in to work with the wranglers. And every day that they found some time in the schedule for me to work with the wranglers, I would go to set, and it would turn out that they needed the horse that I was supposed to be working on. And they would go, let's try to get you in tomorrow. Long story short, I get to set on my first day where I'm supposed to be riding, and I've only been up on a horse once before that. I managed to find a wrangler at the hotel that I'm staying at and say, hey, can you just take me out and just let me just feel it for a day? I just want to get on the horse and just feel it. So I at least had ridden. I at least had been in a saddle, felt what it felt like, ridden around, gotten some basic commands and steering cues and how to go and how to stop and how to turn, all the basics of the organic vehicle that I'm going to be on top of. And so I show up on day one and I walk up and Kevin goes, how do you feel? Can you ride? And I just go, and I do the hand signal. I'm doing it that the people on TikTok can see it, but it's the shaky hand like this. And I go, yeah, kinda. And he goes, well, just hop up there on this horse and go over there by those, those cowboys down there and wrangle those cattle, okay? So we've got a whole bunch, just we've got like 20 head of cattle down there, live animals, live cattle, real cowboys down on a horse, and I just get on this horse, and the guy that I'm next to can tell instantly that I don't know what I'm doing because I'm holding the reins wrong, and he comes over to me, and he whispers in my ear, he goes, hey, you don't know what you're doing, right? And I go, not really, and he goes, it's okay, just follow me, you're gonna be fine, do what I do, okay? And I go, okay, all right. So, I mean, this is, by the way, I've been having almost daily panic attacks thinking, what if they just have me get up on a horse and try a bunch of things that I don't know how to do on day one and I don't have, you know, with every day as we approached this day, I was getting more and more and more nervous. And pretty much day one, it was just like right into it. Just, yep, get up there and go. And I'm proud of myself for this, that I was just like sweating and just the burning in my chest from the anxiety. And I've been trying to learn how to use my anxiety as a tool to focus and how to just go, okay, I'm just going to try to be present here. And this horse can feel me if I'm nervous or if I'm not in control. So I just got to try to be one with this horse. I got to try to be one with the energy of this horse. I got to try to, as much as I can, to use this anxiety as focus fuel. And listen to Mike here, who's telling me to just mimic him. And that first day, I thought went okay. All right, they put me in the game. I was in the NBA, and I think I pretended to look like a capable athlete well enough for my few minutes that no one really noticed on camera that I probably shouldn't have been put in the game. And I think I did okay. And so that day ended, and I, you know, definitely was a little sore and a little beat up. It's a weird thing if you're not used to it, the posture that you have to be in, the position you have to be in, and what moving on that horse does to you, trotting up and down kind of rough terrain. If you're not used to it, it takes a toll on your thighs, on your low back, even on your high back, your shoulders, weirdly, something about the work with the reins, your arms and your shoulders get a workout, and it definitely, you know, beat me up, but I felt good about the way that I was able to fake it. And it was sort of what I had hoped to do, is like, I think I can sell that I'm not a total novice, you know, as long as I'm not running around too fast or doing anything too crazy. Then it comes to the next day that I'm supposed to be riding. And at this point, I'm starting to think like, okay, you know, I got it now. I'm feeling a little less scared, a little more cocky, a little more confident. I think I can do increased reps in the game. And they put me in for this big wagon train scene where the wagon train's moving down and they want me to just kind of ride up and down the side of the wagon train like I'm just sort of keeping the wagons in line and keeping an eye on the oxen and the animals and stuff. And I'm doing my thing. I'm kind of riding like I was the first day, kind of slow and kind of meandering and stuff. But again, I thought I was looking okay. I thought I looked cool up there. I thought I looked confident. Apparently, that's not the case. Apparently, it was so obvious that I was not comfortable on there and that I did not look the part that our director, Mr. Costner, pulled one of our head wranglers aside and said, I want you to go out into that field over there and have him run back and forth. I just want to see what he looks like on that horse running back and forth. He looks a little uncomfortable to me. I don't want you to embarrass him. I don't want you to make him feel insecure or like I'm looking at him or like I'm judging him. Don't even tell him I'm watching. Just tell him you want to take him over to that field and do a little bit of running. And so this guy comes over and he says, hey, come follow me. We're going to go do something. And I follow him and he goes, I want you to just kind of lope across that field down to that tree and turn around and come back. And I say, what does lope mean? And so if you're a person who rides horses at all, you'll know that that's not a good sign that's like if they put me in the NBA game and Steve Kerr noticed that I didn't quite have the posture of a professional athlete. And he said, hey, why don't you just go over and just have him do a layup drill? And they just said, hey, Austin, we just want you to run down there and just do a couple layups. And I said, what does that mean? What's a layup? And, the head wrangler almost immediately. Now, mind you, I don't know that what he has been instructed to do is to deal with me gently and to deal with me in a way that will not cause me to feel insecure or humiliated. I don't know that that's what's happened. I have no idea what's going on. They just said, follow us. We're going to do something over here. I thought we were getting ready for another shot or something. I did not know I was being watched. I did not know what was happening. And I say, what does lope mean? And this man looks me in the face and he goes, you have no fucking idea what you're doing, do you? And I said, I'm pretty new to all this. I'm kind of getting used to it. I'm sorry. You're just going to have to, does that mean like run? Do you want me to run? And he goes, you don't know how to fucking ride, do you? And I went, and as I'm trying to answer, he goes, you lied. You lied to get on this job and now you have the job and we're all stuck with you because you're a liar. And I went, whoa, hold on. My agent called me and asked me, can you ride a horse? And I said, I rode horses 20 years ago. He cuts me off. He goes, if you rode a horse 20 years ago, you would know how to ride better than this. You're a fucking liar. And I went, if I rode a horse 20 years ago as a kid, as a tourist, and I would know. I said, I'm telling you the truth. And he goes, if you weren't a liar, you wouldn't be sitting on that horse right now. You wouldn't be in this position. So what is happening in this moment as this man is talking to me is it's my greatest fear manifest. All of my fears about riding a horse in this movie are coming to fruition. And so it's a very strange situation to be simultaneously living your greatest dream, doing the thing that you live to do in front of people that are heroes to you, idols to you, legends. The set is populated with them, people that mean a lot to me, people who have played characters that live in my heart and in my brain, people who have spoken lines of dialogue that are seared into my memory are watching me right now be told by this man that I'm a fraud. So the imposter syndrome that is already there is being fully confirmed. I'm simultaneously on a big Hollywood movie set shooting a big Hollywood movie with my idols and also being told in front of all of them that I am the fraud that I think I am and that I don't believe that I don't actually belong there. And I'm trying to sort of keep my wits about me and keep my head from reeling because I'm also still sitting atop a massive beast that can feel my energy. And I say, whoa, can we slow down here? Slow down. Whatever it is that we're going to need to do here, I need you to be on my team. And you seem really upset with me. And he goes, yeah, I'm upset because you're a fucking liar. And I go, okay, I don't think I lied, but I need your help. What do you need me to do? And he goes, well, you're going to go out with JT here and you're going to run across that field because now that you have the job, you have to do it. And there's no time for you to figure it out. So just go fucking do it. And I go, okay, all right. Yeah, let's go. So I go out with this guy and I go, what do I do? And he said, just give him a little kick and push your hands forward and give him a little, you know, that little noise. And he goes, and he'll know what to do. Push your hands forward and just, and hang on. And I've never really broken into a full stride with a horse. And we attempted it and it went terribly. It didn't go as bad as it could have gone. I could have fallen off and gotten hurt really badly. I stayed on, but I went about 20 yards before I panicked and pulled the reins and stopped. So he runs over, why the hell did you stop? And I go, I'm completely out of control here. I'm completely out of sync with the horse. I'm not flowing with the horse. I'm bouncing up and down. I'm barely hanging on. And he goes, all right, let's try it again. So we go back and forth probably 30 times. I'm hyperventilating. I can't breathe right. I'm like, he keeps coming over to me and this guy keeps coming over to me and going, why are you breathing like that? Why are you breathing like that? And I go, I have pretty bad panic disorder and I'm kind of having a panic attack right now. And I'm trying to get this right. And I don't want to get off the horse until I get it right. I'm committed to staying up here. And he goes, hell, you're damn right. You're committed to staying up there. Go again, down to that tree, turn around and come back. I felt like I was maybe going to pass out. It starts to feel very unsafe, but I'm like, I'm like committed to getting this right because I'm like, well, I've never been in a situation like this. Now I start to feel the eyes of the set on me. I start to feel that the actors that I respect are moving in, that the set we were on is moving in, the cameras are moving in, and I'm feeling that everyone is watching this impromptu lesson happen. The entire crew is gathering around and everyone is watching me get yelled at and watching me bob up and down and flail around on this saddle and try to find a rhythm with this beast that I'm sitting atop of, and seeing that my head is swishing back and forth, and a guy keeps riding alongside of me and putting his hand on top of my shoulder and pushing me down into the saddle as we're running, and he's saying, sit down on the saddle, sit down, and he's saying, hold your head still, and he's saying, point your heels down, and he's saying, keep your legs taut, and he's saying, stand up into those stirrups, and he's saying, grab the reins with your other hand, you steer, not him, you tell him where to go, he doesn't tell you where to go. And it is, I mean, it's just, it's just a waking nightmare. I mean, it is all of my fears made manifest. So why am I fucking telling you this story? Am I just complaining? Is that what we're doing? Am I just telling you about this sad thing that happened to me on this really cool thing? No. I'm telling you this story because the universe has had a way lately, and really my whole life, of giving me the opportunity of being in the things that scare me. And showing me that I'm capable of sitting in that fear, of being in that fear, and continuing to hold my head up tall and continuing to move through it. Being in that embarrassment, that humiliation. Because here's the thing is, I mean, I was absolutely humiliated. I was devastated. I went back and forth about 30, 40 times and wasn't getting much better. There were probably about 5 seconds in there where I actually flowed with the horse and I could feel what it was that I'm supposed to be feeling, but it was fleeting. I would get it for a second and then it would go away and I would start bobbing up and down again and flailing all over the place. Finally, the guy I was working with, who was actually very kind, who was actually really trying to help me, said, we got to get you off that horse. Your legs are going to seize up. You got the shakes. And I looked down and my legs are violently shaking. And I didn't even notice that they were. I was so focused on trying to get this gallop right that I didn't notice that my legs had started to violently shake. So they go, we got to get you off that horse. So they pull me off the horse and I try to walk away and I sort of stumble away because I can barely stand. And I sort of look like Tua Tagovailoa. If you've seen that clip of Tua Tagovailoa after he got a concussion a few weeks ago in the NFL, I sort of looked like that walking back to set. So again, all these actors who are sitting at cast holding, these actors I admire, are watching me walk back, breathing heavy, hyperventilating, legs shaking. And I had to stand there in the tent with them while some PAs brought me some water. And while I sort of, my face was flushed and I couldn't catch my breath and my legs were shaking and I had to, they all were just looking at me and no one was saying anything. And it was humiliating 100%. And it was an absolute ego hit. And it was, I felt that I was fully exposed as a fraud, as a person who did not belong anywhere near that set, as a person who was miscast, as a person who should not have been there. And yeah, it was, I mean, here's the thing about the universe giving me these opportunities to be face to face with the things that scare me the most and the things that I am worried about experiencing is, it goes as bad as I think it's going to go. When I catastrophize, when I think about the future and I think, oh, I really hope that thing doesn't happen or this thing doesn't happen, it's not that like then it happens and I go, oh, that wasn't so bad. It's bad. It doesn't feel good. I talked last week about kidney stones. I've talked about this a few times on this podcast about how my whole life I was afraid of getting kidney stones. And then I got them and they were as bad as I thought they were going to be and worse. But there's something about being in that pain and going, well, this is about as bad as I can imagine feeling, but also recognizing, but I'm doing it. I'm here. The more I live and the more I go through these moments, you guys, the more I kind of live for these moments. It's weird. It doesn't feel good. They don't feel good. But I kind of live for these moments where I'm sort of faced with an option of like, is this thing going to break you? Are you going to be broken by this? Is this thing going to be the thing that makes you quit acting? Is this your Dead Eyes moment? If you've listened to the podcast Dead Eyes, that like Tom Hanks told Connor Ratliff he has dead eyes and it made Connor Ratliff quit acting for almost 10 years. You know, like, is this it? Is this the thing that I'm going to go, I went and did this big Kevin Costner movie and I got totally embarrassed in front of the cast because I wasn't good enough at riding horses. And now I can't imagine stepping foot back on a movie set. What is this going to do? I kind of live for these moments. I had a moment like this when I got a DUI. Y'all know I'm sober. I'm 4.5 years sober. But I remember when I got a DUI and I was sitting in jail that night and thinking, I was devastated and I was thinking, this is going to ruin my life. I'm finished. I don't know how I'm going to recover from this. And then in that jail sitting there, I thought, okay, well, I have two options. This is either going to destroy my life and completely destroy my future and destroy all my prospects, or I'm going to come out of here a stronger, more resilient, smarter person, a version of myself. And it took me a while after that DUI to get it. It still took me about 3 years after that to get sober. But I kind of live for these moments. I kind of live for these make or break moments where it's like, yeah, okay, you got put in the game. They put you in the game and they passed you the ball and it went off your face. It broke your nose. And then you went down to the other end and Shaquille O'Neal dunked on you so hard that his nutsack went in your face and you fell over into the crowd and got up shaking and crying, and they pulled you out of the game immediately, and it was on national television, and everyone saw it. your high school friends saw it, and your high school crush saw it, and everyone knows that you're a total joke and a fraud now. So what are you going to do? Is this going to be the thing that devastates you? Is this going to be the thing that takes you out and that ruins your life, or are you going to somehow come back better? So Here's where I'm at, you guys, is at the end of that day, the day where I couldn't ride and I had to get off because my legs were shaking, I decided in that day, I'm going to get back up on that horse. Once my legs calm down and once I get control of my breathing, I'm going to get back up on that horse. I'm going to try it again. I went over to our head wrangler, the guy who was being really rough with me. Again, remember, this guy was told, he was instructed to make me feel safe and taken care of and secure. And instead, he called me a liar and told me that I had no business being on that set. But I went over to that guy and I said, hey, I would love to get back up on that horse and keep trying. And he looked at me and he said, I don't think you're going to be coming back, so don't worry about that. And he turned around and walked away. Turned back over his shoulder and said, you did start looking better near the end, though. I'll give you that. And walked away. So this man told me that I was probably getting fired and that I probably wasn't going to come back. So I spent the last about 3 hours of that day sitting in a tent thinking, did I just lose this job? And does everyone know it? Does everyone on the – I had this idea in my head, like, does everyone on this set know that I'm fired right now? And no, because no one was talking to me and no one was looking at me. And it was sort of this weird energy of like everyone could feel like that was really embarrassing what just happened to Austin, like that. And no one really knew how to talk to me or what to say. And so I went home not knowing if I was coming back the next day. And I just had to sort of wait and go, Either I'm going to get an email that I'm on the call sheet, or I'm going to get a call that I'm going home. And I don't know. After sort of the worst was over, and I had that pants down in front of my idols moment, and that embarrassment was over, I just kind of thought, okay, well, at least I had this experience, even if I don't come back. And I sort of was calm about it. And that's what these things can do. That's what these moments can do for you. These moments where your worst fear is coming true, your worst nightmare is happening. It can sort of, once you make it through the discomfort, and once you sit in the discomfort, because everything I was feeling was appropriate. The embarrassment was appropriate. The humiliation was appropriate. The fear was appropriate. The disappointment, the devastation, was all appropriate. That's an appropriate emotional response to that situation. What I'm trying to work on right now in my life is letting those emotions, like everything else, flow through me in a transient way. Feel them, recognize them, see them, honor them as valid, and let them flow through me so that I can sit and go, all right, well, next up is waiting to see if I'm on the call sheet tomorrow or if I'm going home. I was on the call sheet. I went back and I had a scene the next day, just sitting around a fire with and just talking. And the scene went pretty well. And I felt pretty good about it. And I even got some pretty nice words said to me by the director. And that felt good. And the other actors who I really respect said some pretty nice things. And a couple of them came up to me and said, hey, man, I'm sorry you had such a rough day yesterday. You shouldn't have been treated like that. And I'm sorry that happened. And that felt good. But I also still felt this feeling of, you know, kind of like I was still embarrassed, still kind of humiliated, still kind of felt like everyone sort of was looking at me as like, you kind of got exposed. I'm not sure if you should be here. But here's the thing. I'm supposed to, in theory, be back on this film in the spring. Because we're shooting the second film, and I'm in that script, my character is, and so far I have not been told that I have been recast or that they are going in another direction. So regardless of whether or not I wind up doing that film, what's going to happen now is I'm going to go back to Los Angeles. I'm going to find a place where I can take reasonably priced writing lessons, and I'm going to start taking a weekly horse riding lesson. And I am determined to figure out how to ride a horse in a competent, confident way. And honestly, it's one of these things, you guys, that I have no idea how I'm going to do. My life has also been full of this stuff lately, of just deciding I'm going to do something, having no idea how I'm going to do it, but deciding that I'm going to do it. I have the back of an 80-year-old, and my body is beat to shit right now. That day of running back and forth in that field beat the absolute hell out of me. My entire back is bruised and in extreme pain. My legs are bruised. My shoulders are bruised. My arms hurt. My ego is sure bruised. But I'm whether or not they decide to bring me back, I'm going to learn how to ride a horse. That's what I'm going to take out of this experience. I'm going to learn how to do it so that if it ever comes up again, I can go, now I know how to do that. And I don't know. I rapped today not knowing if I'd be back. There was a sentiment on set from a few people were like, we don't know if we'll see you again. They were like, we'll see. We'll see if we see you in the spring. The word from the man in charge seemed reasonably positive. I let him know that I was planning on coming back a stronger writer, and he said, I have faith in you. He told me, I think you're a really good actor, and he gave me a few pointers on writing, and he said, I think you'll be all right. So that's where I'm at. It's, yeah, my greatest dream, my greatest fear, all wrapped up in one. It was such a strange week. Devastating, humiliating, embarrassing, and also life-affirming and beautiful and wonderful and challenging in all the right ways. And if that's it, if that's all I get, then, you know, I don't know. I got my few minutes on court, you know. I got to be in the game for a few minutes, and it was cool. Let's see here. We got people on TikTok who have been listening diligently. Thank you. Thank you for listening, everybody, to my very long story about falling off the proverbial horse and getting back on. Let's see what people are saying. Grumpy Don 7 says, much worse things could have happened. My father-in-law got thrown and broke a hip. Years of riding. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is like all the riders that I talked to this week, all the wranglers said, if you ride long enough, you will get thrown. So that's another thing about like taking riding lessons, is I'm like, the more I do it, the more the chances go up that at a certain point I'm going to get thrown. Because being a skilled horseback rider can only get you so far. Because at a certain point, you're still on top of an animal that might just one day go, right now, something spooked me, something didn't feel right, and I'm going to rear back and take off in a way that you're not expecting. And doesn't matter how many years of experience you have or how confident you are, I'm going to throw you. And that part scares the hell out of me. I don't know that I'm going to stop being afraid of this. You know, like I'm going into these lessons going like, I don't even know if I take weekly lessons for 5 months, I still feel like there's going to be an anxiety that at any day that I get on a horse's back could be the day that we just go a little too fast or that the horse gets a little too out of my control, or I lose one of the reins and he takes off running, and that's the day that I fall. And knowing my back and knowing my joints, it scares me, dude. But I don't know. I'm really trying to practice this sort of meditative practice of like leaning into fear, leaning into discomfort, leaning into uncertainty, trying to be tolerant of uncertainty. But yeah, absolutely worst things could have happened. I was frankly proud of myself that day, knowing how goofy I looked out there, knowing how unskilled I looked and unathletic I looked. I was proud that I, A, did not fall off, and B, did not get off, did not like stop, that I was taken off the horse once they saw my legs shaking, but I stayed on there and I continued to move back and forth in that field. And I'm going to take that W. I'm going to take that win. I'm going to say, I stood here, I sat up here on this horse in front of all these people that I've admired my entire life, and I looked like a total idiot and a total jackass, and I kept going. So, Apple Bits for a good ride says, I make cold air. A tip says, Apple Bits. So if I bring some Apple Bits, then I got to just make friends with the horse. That's a good tip that when I come back to set after I've done all my, so when I go do my classes, I'm going to bring some Apple Bits. When I come back to set and I go back to that same horse that I was riding on this time, I'm going to go up to him and go, nice to see you again. And I brought you a little treat, brought you a little something, you know? All right. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. That same person says, they aren't scary, man. Feed them. But like they are though. Like even a couple of the people that I was working with as teachers were like, it makes sense that you're nervous. You are on a very powerful animal that for the most part is incredibly, remarkably obedient and responsive to human commands. But also every person there that was teaching me, every single one of them had been thrown. So, you know, Simix one says, seriously, Austin, your messages and humor give me a ton of hope. Well, I'm trying to share. That's why I wanted to tell this story. Cause like I just finished today and like my heart was very full. I was like, man, that was I had to tell this story to somebody and I had to talk about it. Cause like that, it was an emotional ride, you know, and there's something to it. I'm not even sure I fully understand what the experience was yet this week, and maybe I don't need to, but I get a lot out of sort of logging the stories and the ideas in this way, in this format on the podcast, and I'm glad you get something out of it too. That way it's not just me just talking for the sake of talking, so thank you for saying that. Cinnamon Basic says, I can hear my physical therapist telling me to strengthen my back, core, and thighs to protect my back. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's going to be a big part of the next 5 months. I was already thinking that too, is like, if ever there's been a thing that's going to get me into better shape, it's this. So it's not just about horseback riding lessons. It's also about like, I got to start taking my physical fitness more seriously. I gained a huge amount of respect this week for a process that I've sort of witnessed from afar my whole life. This process that, like, actors will share their training videos for movies and, like, show them training for, like, you know, physical combat, or for, like, you know, like watching Keanu Reeves on a gun range training for John Wick, and he's using all these different kinds of guns and changing out magazines really quickly and doing all this stuff. And sometimes when I watch those training videos for certain actors, I think, aren't you being, like, a little over the top? Like, you don't really need to do all this stuff. It's fake. It's a movie. You don't really need to, like, learn how to do all this. Just pretend, you know, it's make-believe. You don't need to actually, like, put your body through all this hell. And actors that do these huge physical transformations for roles and stuff. And that's never been the kind of actor that I am. I'm a character actor. I'm the kind of guy who puts on a different voice and, like, combs his hair in a different way and puts on a shirt. And I'm like, eh, here I am. I'm this guy now. I've never really had to physically really prepare my body for a role. And I gained a huge respect for actually what it takes now. Watching the guys who actually were really comfortable on the horse and understanding that, like, they actually came to play. You know, there's a reason why they're full-time NBA players and I'm just a guy that gets in for a couple minutes every now and then. There is a separation there between me and them. And I understood in this, like, this week, like, okay, it's not going to be enough for me to just take the lessons. I'm going to have stronger thighs, a stronger core, a stronger back, stronger everything, stronger upper body strength, stronger shoulders, stronger arms. Like, I'm going to have to take that seriously and that development seriously if I'm going to be able to, like, sit confidently on this incredibly strong animal and confidently give it commands. Ray Pete says, working with horses is equally terrifying and rewarding. What a cool fitness challenge to choose. Yeah. Who knew that it could be so physically and like demanding? A lot of the guys that I was working with have been riding their entire lives. And I was, like, talking to them. I was like, guys, I'm so sore after just, like, a day of riding. And they're like, yeah, I don't get sore at all. Which just tells me, like, A, their body has sort of molded to this movement and the shape that it needs to be in. Because it doesn't look like any of them are, like, bodybuilders. They're not, like, dudes with six packs and rippling biceps. You know, they're just, like, regular guys. But I don't know. Like, they're still, like, there are a lot of muscles that were being worked that aren't normally worked for me. And I'm going to have to figure that out. Yeah, the question was asked, where is this shoot? My mom answered it in the chat. It was shot in Moab, Utah, and that's where I am right now. But they're moving around to a lot of different locations. But it was beautiful. I mean, our location was beautiful. It's just been kind of breathtaking every single day. The sun, seeing the sunrise, seeing the sunset every day. Absolutely gorgeous, very atmospheric. I really felt like I went through, like, a very authentic experience this week. I felt like I was an Old West settler, you know, out on the plains, really experiencing the elements and taking, feeling the physical toll too. And most of that's just because I'm out of shape, which I'm hoping to address, you know. Wonderful World says, anxiety arises from self-concern, parentheses, worrying about you. Self-forgetfulness makes it go away. Practice. Yeah, absolutely. You know, being rooted in service and getting outside of myself is a very great tool for, especially, I mean, like, one of my first days. So my first day on the film, I had a lot of anxiety. And then I remembered this thought that I was like, hey, remember, this movie's not about you at all. Not even close to. Your only job is to take care of your little part, your little chunk of the story, your little character, and just to be of service to this bigger project. This project is much bigger than you. It's not your project. It's somebody else's. And your only job is to be of service here. Just be of service to this project. Be of service to anyone who needs a helping hand on set. I got a really lovely note today on my trailer from a background actor. We had these amazing background actors all week long. We had like 100, 150, 200 background actors out here who were doing hard work this week because we were out in the heat in the desert, and they're just like, it was, I mean, it, there are a lot cushier background jobs you can have than this one. And these people were there every day doing hard work. And I tried to make it a point to get to know them and to talk to them and to spend time with them every day. And there was this one woman and her daughter who I talked to every day. And I would like greet them every day as I walked in and say good morning and ask them how they were. And I would usually see them as I was leaving and say, I'll see you guys tomorrow. And I came to my trailer and she had brought me flowers because it was my last day. And she wrote me a note that said, like, your kind actions that may seem small to you are noticed by other people and really appreciated. And yeah, that stuff really helps me. Getting outside of myself, self-forgetfulness, trying to just be kind to other people, be of service to the project really helps for sure. For the most part, I was pretty calm and pretty at ease on this set, on this shoot. It was really just that one day mostly where I got really, really rattled. And I always carry a certain degree of, you know, self-consciousness, self-awareness, fear, anxiety into working situations because I always want to do a good job. And I don't want to try to avoid those feelings or run for them or find a way for them to go away. But absolutely, yes, self-forgetfulness, getting outside of myself, remembering that I'm not the only nervous person or the only person who wants to make a good impression. Those things are definitely helpful. Songbird Close says, do you have a favorite state that you like working in most, or does it really depend on the project? Yeah, I don't do stuff like this enough to be the kind of actor who's always in a different state shooting a different thing or a different country shooting a different thing. I think I've only ever shot in like 5 different states. So I shot in Pittsburgh once. That was a cool town. Got to go around and eat Pittsburgh food and see a lot of bridges, you know. Douglas Brown 420 says, just dunk on Kevin Costner once. All right, yeah. That's what I'll do when I come back. You know what I want to do is I want to ride into set when I come back. I want to ride into set on a horse and I want to jump over the cameraman and just leap over him on a horse and go, I'm back. Even if they recast my part, if they give my part away to another actor, I'm going to ride back in and I'm going to jump over the camera crew as they're setting up a camera and go, I'm back, bitches. And I'm going to have a lasso and I'm going to lasso Costner's leg and pull him and onto his back and go, I'm in this movie, motherfucker. And then I'm going to lasso the other guys that some people have been talking about in the chat that are in this movie. You can look them up. You can look up on IMDb and see who's in the film. It's a big old cast at this point. Sugar cubes and apple slices, man, says I make cold air. All right, I will. All right. That's my story, you know. They asked me if I can ride a horse. I said, I think I can figure it out with a little prep. I got exposed as a person who is just not very comfortable up there. It was embarrassing and humiliating. I have decided to continue moving forward and figure it out and sort it out. Yeah. Thanks for listening. I hope that was useful in some way or helpful in some way. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com or by looking up my music on Spotify or Apple Music. You just search Austin Archer. Patreon.com/AustinArcher if you want to support the show. Love the Patreon patrons. You're all the best. Love you so much. Follow me on YouTube. This podcast has a video version on YouTube if you're not watching that yet. Yeah. Thanks to everyone on TikTok for your comments and your feedback. And thanks to that guy who yelled at me this week for giving me a confrontation with a solid fear that I had, for giving me a confrontation with real, real strong imposter syndrome and an actual situation where I really was being an imposter in front of some people that I really didn't want to get caught in front of, and for that humbling experience. All right. I guess I'll see y'all soon next week. Okay. Take care. Love ya. Bye-bye. I know.